Dynasty Team Synergy, we have our most owned rookies and Dynasty Rankings with Chalk of the Undroppables here. And what I love is you actually have content about Team Synergy and Dynasty, having balance, having a very measured approach. And a lot of those higher looking topics of macro view, I find fascinating. We can all get into the minutiae about rankings and about, you know, trades to make and all this, but I love how you're talking about almost the energy, the balance, and the zen of a dynasty team and putting that together.
Yeah. So, So again, Chad, thanks for having me on. And I think this topic probably isn't talked about enough in depth. I think the concept of having balance on your team, right? You got to have couple quarterbacks, you got to have good depth, and you know, you want to have a good anchor running back and have the receivers. And I think, you know, when we think about composition of a dynasty roster, you start to think of that. But I think when you're starting to really dive into dynasty strategy, the way I've been playing the game more recently, is trying to find that sweet spot, that balance between the dynasty approach, which is, I just want to draft young. I want all the rookies. I want all the young year two breakout guys. And I just want to build with that, right? I just want to build with, you know, all the potential in the world. And I think oftentimes we get caught up as especially early dynasty gamers with that concept of, I just want to build young and have this concept of evergreen. But I think where I started to really find true success, and I think most of us do, is when you start to realize, well, dynasty is really a game of long-term vision, but really thinking about in the short term, you have to be able to win, right? So if you're constantly trying to build, and that's where the productive struggle gets a lot of negative sentiment, because if you're constantly in this, you know, cycle of trying to build long-term, then when do you actually win? So I think the whole concept of the synergy and this balance is, yeah, taking a redraft mindset into every season. So you want a balance of players who are somewhat developmental or have that young upside, but then you definitely want those hammers or those cannons, those guys that are going to come in. And Davante Adams is a great example of a veteran player in Dynasty that I would want on my team, maybe paired with, you know, a young Malik Nabers type or someone like Ilad McConkey that we'll talk about probably later today. So having that balance, finding those proven veterans who are going to provide the immediate production. You want to have the young players with the upside, future growth. So that way you're always having that feeling of, yes, next year, if I don't come through, I still got some players. Maybe I don't have a deep set of draft capital, so but you got some young players, that helps quite a bit. And then also looking at the balance between some solid floor anchor type players, right? You definitely want to build with some elite players at quarterback and potentially receiver. And then mixing in some of those high upside guys. I'm just going to kind of pick a name out of thin air right now. Not necessarily a player I'm targeting and rostering, but just to give you an example, like a Gabe Davis type, right? He has an immense ceiling and upside, but has some really scary floor weeks. But if you have a good balance of a roster, focusing in on those win now type players, then you're going to have that. So I'll kind of stop there for a second. And, you know, I don't know if you had any thoughts, Chad, in terms of what I kind of mentioned.
Yeah, I think the danger, and you kind of mentioned, early on in your answer, is having the extreme of either one isn't really a good thing. You know, that a lot of people get, I call it bikini season. You know, everyone loves the young guys, a bunch of rookie picks, bunch of rookies or second year players. And I think the idea is the hubris that all those players are going to work out, and not just work out, because they can't turn into mid-level players. You need to get anchor stud level players. You need to get one of those guys turning into Ja'Marr Chase, you know, or Breece Hall, or like, you need high-end outcomes. And I think it's very easy in February to tell yourself that story. And then you get into September, October, you're 1-4 and you're like, well, these young guys, they're not ready yet. And frankly, I think people lose sight of historical probabilities, like in a 1-year scenario, but also in like, what are the odds they break out in the next 2 years? And so it's nice to have those assets. But like, one of my phrases is always, at some point, picks, or just prospects, picks/prospects, have to turn into production. Now, that could be the player and pick themselves. I'm smart. I drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. He turns into an elite player. Okay, that's a straightforward scenario. But what if he turns into Devontae Parker plus? Well, that's a problem, because you had a big time asset. you didn't trade it. Not saying every time you have to trade it, but if he doesn't turn into a strong producer, a high level wide receiver one, you lost because you had, you could, like, I traded that pick for Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, as an example in one of my leagues. So I have less worry about getting a strong level player out of Marvin Harrison Jr. Now I don't care because I just moved on to a guy that I already trust more to give me what I'm looking for. But I just think a lot of people, they go all young. And I do think there's danger in going all old, but I would say you still have some rookie picks. You can still move around and do some things, but I would rather skew that way a little more than saying I'm relying on a bunch of young shots to all develop A together and B enough of them to actually field a quality lineup and beat some of those teams, like you said, with Davante Adams and Mike Evans and, you know, these high level players that we know proof of concept are good.
Yeah, I mean, like Derrick Henry's another guy that a lot of people probably didn't want on the dynasty. Travis Kelce, right? That's another player that we'll probably talk about. There are some veterans that, you know, I've honestly shied away as well at times, but I've paid the price, right? Then you pay the rake. Then you're the guy that, you know, doesn't want to win now, and you try to build that, like you said, the bikini team, right? It's summer. We all want to show off our rosters on Twitter or on social media and get the reactions, but in reality, no one really cares, or no one remembers how many likes you got or how many good comments you got. Everyone cares how you placed or if you won money at the end of the season. And that's what we really care about.
You could say those young players are insulated, but it's a very finite amount of time. Good case in point is a lot of times, you know, they can have a down rookie season and they're relatively insulated outside of Quentin Johnston, you know, or through, you know, anchor through the ocean type scenarios of how that outcome was. They're insulated going into year two. My question would be, what happens if they don't take the step forward in year two? So you still have bad outcomes. This idea that I'm just going to stick with this guy for 3-4 years, everything's going to be fine. They're going to go from bench guy to startable to stud. Like, there's just going to be this straightforward trajectory. Like, these NFL teams don't keep going over the top of these players if they don't show the progress they want. So I just think that it's very dangerous to go down that road. And again, having that balance, like you said, of if you have no veteran stable profiles that you can depend on, if the young players don't develop, that's a problem. And then I would say if you have all guys, like all running backs over 28, and all, you know, if McCaffrey's your one and Henry's your two, and like you've got problems, you know, like, so that's not a good scenario either, paired with Adams and Evans and, you know, all these older wide receivers. So you do need to have a blend. But I think you can get by with the older guys and select younger players more so than the opposite.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And I think you made such a great point about those picks need to turn into points or production at some point. Whether, like you said, you draft a great player, you find that round two, round three gem in the rookie draft, and you win. Like, you find Jalen Hurts in the third round of a super flex rookie draft. Like, good for you. But those are, you know, very far and few between. And if you miss that, then you're just going to constantly be chasing the next Jalen Hurts, right? And who knows when it's going to come around? Maybe it is, you know, this year or next year, but we don't know. So yeah, I love that point about it. And to your point about having, you know, veterans now, I think that does present a good advantage to you, because in the event that your team is not shaping out the way you expect, but you still have some good veteran producers, you could easily move them for those young players and those picks that everybody wants anyways, right? So, you know, I think having that approach where you're balanced, you have somewhat of an objective to even go out and win year one, because ultimately I think year one is usually the easiest time you could win a dynasty league, right? Because most people aren't trying to win. You're already going against maybe half the field in year one. So
yeah,
especially in a startup now.
Yeah, like out of a startup, like there's going to be only like 9 teams realistically, mentally, like tuned into saying, I'm going to make the playoffs this year. So 6 of 9 are going to make the playoffs. So you saying I'm going to thwart myself and try not to make the playoffs, it's actually more difficult in that environment, as opposed to I know I'm bad or I took over an orphan, like another scenario with more data points. Because if you just half try to compete, and this whole idea of like, oh, well, I lost in the first round of the playoffs, so that was a not successful season. You had a chance to win. You were in a 50-50 game in December. Why is that a bad scenario? People like, I don't know if this is like an age thing. I mean, I'm getting too old for this, like to just talk like Lethal Weapon or something. But just, I think there's something to it. Like, people are afraid to try and fail. Like, we're in a very like, oh man, I made the playoffs and I didn't win. And then this other league, I made the playoffs and I lost in the first round or I lost in the semis. Like, it's almost like if I didn't win the title, I wish I was like 2-14 and I wasn't even, you know, give me the 102. It's like, well, you don't get those choices. You don't get to choose to, you know, the number two pick or, you know, winning the title. Those aren't your two outcomes. You got to take your shot. And I think a lot of people are just, they almost want to admit failure in the beginning and say, well, I wasn't even trying. So on to 2025. Dude, it's July. What are we doing? Like, be competitive. You have 4 or 5 months.
It's the easiest time to get good players, right? I mean, a starter draft, you have all the players in front of you, so 100%.
Let's go a little more to dynasty portfolio. So one thing at a time, and consuming your content over the course of time this off season, there's a few things that kind of stuck out to me. You outline in terms of, and again, looking at synergy, looking at balance, looking at team building, and kind of the macro view there. You mentioned, hey, get yourself an elite quarterback, elite wide receiver. That sounds like it's job one. Maybe it's job one and two here in Superflex or in typical formats here that value quarterback alongside wide receiver.
Yeah, 100%, especially in Superflex leagues. You know, I truly believe that the best, cheapest time, you know, the time you can get the elite quarterback, you know, at the lowest potential cost is going to be a starter draft. And you really need to build with the elite quarterback. If you don't have one, you need to save all your first round picks to go and buy one or go acquire one, because it is really difficult to win a Superflex, you know, league without a elite quarterback. I mean, if it's a 4-point passing touchdowns, then you definitely want a Konami type quarterback. If it's 6-point passing touchdowns, then you know the case remains that you definitely want someone like a Lamar Jackson or a Jalen Hurts, a Josh Allen, those guys. I mean, you know, even an Anthony Richardson, who's maybe not elite today, but he has that potential to be elite. I mean, I could say, you know, you could even prioritize rostering someone like that as your foundation, and then having that elite wide receiver and it's almost like this isn't anything new, because if you look at any startup board, like ADP, any year in Dynasty and Superflex, it's the elite quarterbacks go first, and then you got the elite wide receivers off the board. And then from there, it's kind of a crapshoot. But usually in the first two rounds, you're seeing all the quarterbacks and receivers go. So if I'm looking at ADP, I'm looking at trends historically, like you mentioned earlier, you definitely want to secure those assets, because A, quarterbacks are hard to acquire, especially the elite ones later on. They're going to be extremely expensive. And those that have those players, they're not going to want to give them up for anything less than a king's ransom. And then the wide receivers, starting off your team with a CeeDee Lamb, a Jamar Chase, a Justin Jefferson, you got a locked in wide receiver one for what, 5, 7 years, maybe longer? I mean, you know, all things kind of considered, right? I mean, imagine having Julio Jones as a rookie or, you know, second year player for however long he played, you know, for 10 years. So having that foundation, it just gives you such an advantage in terms of flexibility to build the rest of your team, and go and maybe you have a nice young receiver or, you know, a nice young elite quarterback. Then you're able to pair that quarterback with the old back, when we get that later. But that gives you that balance to now build, a balanced roster when you have that foundation.
What you were saying about the startup draft being the most accessible point, I find it baffling that in an existing league, so someone with Mahomes, someone with Josh Allen, it will take, like you said, a ransom basically to try to pry them away. You're dealing with one owner. Yet what I find fascinating is you'll get into a startup draft and the owner that has 101 or 102 in those positions will be far more, you know, gracious in get moving back, moving, like, I don't care if you move to 3 or 11 or whatever. The point is you're moving off of those spots. And I find it fascinating that they will sell for a pittance in that situation when you have it right on your racket, right on your paddle there to just take that player. And yet, you know, if they drafted Josh Allen and then you accelerate the league a few weeks, good luck, you will not be able to trade for him. Yet they'll move off of that. So, and what you said about the quarterbacks and wide receivers early, they're stacked up there relatively early, but you can, like, I've never whiplashed so much as 5 years ago, 8 years ago. It was all about moving back. And now the marketplace in a startup draft, it's all about moving forward, in my opinion. It's all about getting higher. And don't worry if you're giving, you know, you're all of a sudden not in round 4, you're not in round 5. Who cares? Like, you're using that as leverage to get that quarterback or two and that wide receiver up in the early rounds that are hard and difficult to replace if you don't get them.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound blasphemous coming from me, but yeah, trading out of the first round, even the second round, I mean, is not as strategic and not as smart as it used to be. First, everybody's onto this whole trade back idea, so the market and the
The
competition
first thing
to,
you do
get
is you
done.
get in there and everyone talks about
Everyone
like,
should,
oh, picks on the block, trading down,
right? So,
available for sale, looking to move down. So you kind of, I mean, I'm not saying you always take the bait in that. It depends where you're going and what the cost is, but you got a bunch of people selling. All of a sudden, it's a buyer's market. It's crazy.
It's crazy. So yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I'm finding myself, in these types of drafts, looking for those opportunities to maybe even, trade up, and maybe I'll leave the first two rounds with two elite quarterbacks, and maybe I don't have a pick, in the third round, and maybe I traded my next year's first. But I
Right.
mean, to trade a, trade, if you compare, like we talked about, you compare like what you gave up for Patrick Mahomes in the startup, and you fast forward 2 weeks after the draft, and you offer that exact same package for Mahomes to that same person. I mean, you couldn't do it, but if we live in the multiverse, it would be rejected in a second. And I know, because I've done it the other way. I've traded the 101 away, knowing in my mind it's I got gifted this randomized 101, right? It's like I was gifted Mahomes. Like I could have just easily gotten the 111, right? So whatever I can get on top of the 111, to me, is profit, at least in my mind, right? Like at the moment. So maybe that's how other managers also view it, that it's found money, that they're more willing to give it away versus I've already acquired this, I've invested, I have some type of attachment to this player now. I press the button, and it is going to be harder to pry that player away.
Yeah, and I think people underestimate the risk of the profile that someone like Mahomes and Allen have built. And then if you go out, insert any other quarterback, and there's people that love Lamar Jackson or CJ Stroud or Justin Herbert, or insert five other quarterbacks. They all carry a ton of risk that whatever their high spot has been so far doesn't continue. They don't have the resume built. Like, do you really have faith that they're going to be a strong fantasy producer with high quarterback one outcomes possible every single year 5 years from now? And if you have
It's
faith like
hard
that,
to
Godspeed. But it's like, so if you traded back to 111 and you're like, Anthony Richardson's my guy, or Justin Herbert is my guy, and you're just like, I'm super smart. I got Nico Collins on top of that because I got a fourth round, startup pick, and I got a future first. Okay. Well, if you have to fix quarterback later on, all that profit goes away. Whatever smartness you think you're doing, like you're gonna have to pay the premium to create, to fix your mistake. So that's a
yeah,
real,
100%.
you're creating problems. You're digging yourself. It could work out. If you sharpshoot the quarterback, you win. But good luck. Good luck finding the guy that's gonna sharpshoot and replicate. It's like the Moneyball thing, right? Replicate Giambi in the aggregate, with all these pieces and profiles that are not Giambi. So good luck. Another point you made, another theme is being open to older quarterbacks. So, kind of talk about that in terms of it's a difficult position you kind of mentioned. So, talk about age, quarterback, and kind of how that fits into your overarching strategy.
Yeah, so I mean, with Dynasty, like we've talked about so far, it's this whole concept of youth and prioritizing youth, and at the running back position, of course, right? I mean, they once they kind of cross, 26, 27, they gain 28, like the cliff and the production, it's a steep decline. Receivers, it's a little bit more gracious, and the same with tight ends and the quarterbacks. I mean, we've seen with many of these quarterbacks playing, deep into their 30s. So me not shying, no longer shying away from someone like a Matt Stafford, who I wish I kind of bought into him, even a few years earlier than I have been over the last couple of seasons. But because he came to the Rams and he had like some success, and he had like a back injury, and then it was like, is he retiring? And there was like this huge drop off in his value, and I think that was a good opportunity to pick up on him. And like Kirk Cousins, another guy, veteran quarterback, just been like disrespected. Like he's just been so boring, but like a boring QB1. Like he's just consistent. Like maybe he's not a top five quarterback every year, but hey, he's there. And he's kind of up there in age. But another guy that, Cousins is like another guy that I would be totally happy rostering as my second quarterback in Dynasty. And rolling with that, and then having a third quarterback, and maybe even another older guy, or rolling with the Sam Howell type of backup as my third guy. And as long as you have the elite quarterback, I think you have a strong anchor to kind of work off of. And then you can kind of insulate that with, having Matt Stafford as your QB2, and then maybe you have like a Jacoby or Darnold on the bench, or maybe both of them, at their cost. And those guys, right? Jacoby and Darnold also, maybe not the better examples of these backup older quarterbacks, but be open to it, right? Jacoby's probably going to start this year, and he's probably going to start maybe at least half the season if I had to project it out, and be open to that, right? Be open to rostering some of these quarterbacks, getting into their age. I mean, Rodgers is probably like on the real tail end of it, so be a little bit more careful with that. Even like a Derek Carr, like he might be at some decent value. I mean, I wouldn't go and try to go add him, but he's another player that, hey, he has some decent weapons and around him. He has Kamara, Olave, Juwan Johnson. So it's a decent team there. So I'd be open to those quarterbacks, especially if they have some weapons that they can kind of feed and dump off. And we saw like Joe Flacco have this renaissance last season. I mean, I'm not going to say that every year you're going to see that, but yeah, we see that from these older quarterbacks, because I think that position is very cerebral. And as these quarterbacks get older, maybe their bodies don't cooperate, but they're able to process these defenses and read coverages so much faster and get down their reads. And I think that's what we've seen with these young quarterbacks who are really good prospects, a la like Bryce Young, and then versus CJ Stroud, right? Like we thought CJ Stroud wouldn't be able to go through his progression, but these younger quarterbacks have it more trouble getting to their reads. So, I think the older quarterbacks, signal callers, present somewhat of advantage. And if we're saying an advantage in production and playing and on the field, then there's advantage to points, production and dynasty.
Yeah, two things I would add on the older quarterback front. I did a study a few years ago, and what I found is all these good quarterbacks, and it was like Rivers and Matt Ryan and Big Ben, Brady, Breeze, even all-timers, Peyton Manning, they all at some point in their mid-30s had that year. Eli Manning is a classic case. Like they have that year where it's either down touchdown rate, interceptions go through the roof. Eli would always oscillate between what, like 22 interceptions, and he had like 10, and after the 22, he would be minimally valued, but you get to a point, and everyone says these all-time type players are all, in this 20-year span, one of the best quarterbacks we've had. They end up like they're done. They're gonna just, Brady had two of those, I believe, where it's just like, oh, he's done, traded for a song. Drew Brees considered like he was gonna be retired 2 years before he did. And you have this value point of they come at a huge discount where basically it's almost a, well, I think they're going to be barely functional this year and then retire. And if they don't do that, if they do anything more than that, like be themselves or play multiple seasons, you win. The bet is just those. And so I think always looking for that quarterback in the mid 30s, that really good profile. And people are just writing off for some reason or another. Aaron Rodgers, they started writing off 2, 3 years ago. The one I would say that I think might become the annual for me is Dak Prescott, because people are already doing it 30 years old. So I wonder, I call it the microwave society, things are getting quicker. And I wonder if the 35 is now the 30, or 31, because Dak turned over to 30. He was so good last year, and people are like, nah, let's move you down. So I
It's
wonder if every
crazy.
year, yeah. So now it's like, I saw him go like QB 14, 15, 16 in a startup. That's nutty stuff. Like, I can't even process. This guy was QB2, I believe, the last like 2 months of last year. Nothing's changed. He is good. We know this. Proof of concept. Dak Prescott is good. And so I don't, he's going to be good for a while. So I just think every year he's going to be our go-to guy, and like, he's never going up. He's never going to be in the top 10 in dynasty consensus ever again. And he's going to be QB, I don't know, 14 to 25 for the next, like, you just do a startup draft. We can record the show now. Chalk. We can do it right now, talking about 2025, and be like, you know who's a good QB2 when we were doing our build? Dak Prescott. Get him, I don't know, third round, fourth round. That's it. We can have that conversation and repeat the next 3 years.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he's one of my most rostered quarterbacks in Dynasty, and I just keep adding him because yeah, he's just continuously disrespected, and it's crazy to see like how he's actually being dropped in Dynasty after the season he had just had.
Too old,
And see,
too old, too boring. That must be it
too.
is. They would rather have Jaden Daniels, a complete, I don't know what I have, never played, there are risk factors involved. He had great weapons around him in LSU. I'm sure it's going to be awesome. Okay. But
Yeah.
the odds that Dak Prescott over the next 5 years beats him more years than not is very high. It's
I would take that
very high.
bet. I would take
Yeah.
that bet. Yeah.
But again, some people in startups are doing the exact opposite because, again, you know what? Bikinis pay the bills in February. That's what we've learned. Let's go to a couple rookie topics here. So, Will Shipley, your most owned rookie. Talk about him. I'm on board. He's one of my favorite day three running backs. He's going way too late in my taste. But talk about Will Shipley there landing with the Eagles, going early on day three, and what makes him your most owned rookie.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, like you said, he's just going way too late in rookie drafts, right? And I get it, right? He's in Philly and he's behind Saquon, and it's Jalen Hurts at the quarterback position. So, all that said, the immediate outlook does not look great, but at his ADP, I think he's an immense value, and this is why. So he's an all-purpose, like three down type of running back. He's good between the tackles. I know yard per carry aren't isn't like the most favored metric, but I mean, we still look at that in terms of like, can he run the ball, right? So average more than 5.5, 5.6 yards per carry at his career at Clemson. But what really stands out to me in PPR formats, of course, is the 85 career receptions. This guy is a weapon in the passing game. Looking at first down per rush attempts and going back to the rushing aspect of it. I mean, he's right there with Jonathan Brooks and the leader of the class, Isaiah Davis, in terms of first downs per rush attempts. And he's explosive, right? I mean, when he's running the ball, he had a 16% explosive run rate per PFF. Ran a 4.440 at the combine, and then going back to like the passing profile, the receiving profile. He's on par in terms of targets per route run with the best of the class. So the wide receiver converted running back Tyrone Tracy and Dylan Lobb, who's also another one of those valued kind of in the passing game type running backs. He's right there with them. So I think given all that, I think he fits the Eagles offense really well. First of all, he's almost like a clone. I mean, like a mini version of what Saquon does, right? Saquon's a three down back. He's great between tackles. He can run the ball. He can catch and he's explosive. And Will Shipley, I mean, he's young, explosive, and he can catch and run. I also like how Will Shipley has a good chance to overcome Kenneth Gainwell and be the number two. I think he's gonna be a better runner than Gainwell, and I think he's just as good, if not better, in the passing game. And then just following other guys in the industry, guys like Reggie, who I really respect in terms of prospect and evaluations. And he was also pumping up Shipley. And just kind of seeing that, just kind of validating confirmation bias, all that good stuff. It just made me feel really confident going into drafts. And then again, seeing him slip by, it was like almost a no-brainer in the fourth round, right? It was like every time I was in the fourth round, 4-1, four. It wasn't even 4-1. It was like after 4-2. I mean, mid fourth round, Will Shipley there. I'd click the button, and then as I got into some of the later rookie drafts, people getting smarter. I did click the button at like 312 on one or two occasions.
Okay. Yeah. I do worry about Kenneth Gainwell. If I only had someone, if everyone in their life has someone that loves them as much as the Eagles love Kenneth Gainwell, the world would be a better place. So I do worry a little bit about that. But Shipley, he has no holes. Like what you were outlining is a well-balanced running back prospect. And he went to a major program and we're picking him apart. And like you said, pushing him beyond. These are all injury away guys. Like to think that Ray Davis or Tyrone Tracy or insert all these guys that they're going to win a job from day three early in their career. It's all unlikely. So we need an injury. Barkley does miss games, but you have a good offense, you have a good player, and so I think that leads to upside. So the fact that he's going cheaper and he actually has a better profile than a lot of those guys is
Yeah.
pretty easy math, I think, in later rookie drafts.
Yeah, I love that.
In terms of round one and round two, Ladd McConkey is a guy that you are a big proponent of. Like that was the most notable in terms of early guys or bigger names, than Will Shipley, let's say. So
Yeah.
talk about Ladd McConkey in terms of what you view for him. Where have you? How aggressive have you been getting him and some of his profile appeal within this class?
Yeah, so for me, I have Ladd kind of in that 109, 110 range. I kind of flip-flop between like him and Jonathan Brooks, kind of maybe depends on like team need at that point, because I really think that in terms of where I view them, in terms of like best player available, I see Ladd and Jonathan Brooks right there on the tail end of the first round. I do like Ladd more than guys that are going in that range. And so I guess really kind of speak to, Ladd McConkey. I think the concern with Ladd is obviously the situation that he was in, or he's been drafted into, right? It's a Chargers offense that's going to be very run heavy. It's Greg Roman, but there's Justin Herbert. And if we think back to the combine, the rookie cycle, right, there was a lot of hope and aspiration for someone like Malik Nabers to end up with the Chargers, right? Like, oh, how fun would that be if that Malik Nabers was paired up with Justin Herbert, right? And that didn't happen, of course. And now we got Ladd McConkey, and it was a early round two pick on him at pick 34. So I mean, right there at the beginning of the second round. And I get it. Malik Nabers is a much different talent, different, I mean, tiers above Ladd McConkey. But Ladd McConkey was no slouch at Georgia. I mean, he was not the main option in the passing game, but he still produced over 800 yards, 7 touchdowns in his last season at Georgia. I mean, when he was targeted by his quarterback, I mean, he made his quarterback better every single time. And that's scary considering that his new quarterback is Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert is already gushing about Ladd McConkey. So I think in terms of where I'm seeing Ladd go in rookie drafts, considering ADP, I think he's a value. Like I do prefer him over someone like a Xavier Worthy, a Ryan Thomas, a Keon Coleman. Like those are some receivers that are going in that late first, early second range that I prefer. I prefer Ladd McConkey over. But I would not take Ladd McConkey over a Brock Bowers or a McCarthy or a May, right? So, I think that first eight is really locked in. Again, if it's, Brooks or McConkey, I'm okay at 9 or 10. And then, if I can get Ladd at 11 or 12, I'm looking at ADP now. He's going at like 112 right now. I'd love to take him there. The reason I like Ladd over a Brian Thomas Jr., I think Ladd just goes into a better situation overall. He has Justin Herbert, who I do think is a better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence, although that may be debatable. And I think he's going to be the main passing kind of option on that team. So for those reasons, I think that it's a high upside, high ceiling for someone like Ladd. And then he has great metrics. He has great skill set, yards after the catch. Solid route runner and all that good stuff. So I think just looking at the profile, looking at the situation, and looking at the players around him, especially at the receiver position, I think Ladd is a no-brainer.
We've built up chemistry and trust over this show so far. Now I wanted to interrogate a little bit. And you kind of talked about this. We talked a few minutes before the show on, hey, you put up rankings and it just exposes your soul. It's a number, it's a tier. You get to see it black and white and stacking up players. And that leads to, again, everybody wants it. Everyone wants rankings as a consumer. And it also, again, toughens us up because we get plenty of comments about rankings. It's just the nature of the business. Comments coming. So I picked out a player at every single position. So this is going to be basically defend your stance and anchor up essentially. So Jordan Love, QB 14. I've got to ask. It stood out to me. So Jordan Love, prolific in terms of his seasonal finish, and it wasn't just three, four games. It was a huge chunk. They almost made the Super Bowl. So Jordan Love, first real time playing extended amount in the NFL. QB 14. QB 14. And this isn't that you have guys with minimal experience all low in your rankings. You have Stroud high. You have Anthony Richardson high. So it's not a sample size thing. So talk through Jordan Love, out in the teens, firmly so, in your quarterback rankings.
Yeah, so admittedly, I am low on Jordan Love, and it's been hard for me to put him higher in terms of quarterback 14, and now kind of go through that kind of process. And I think it's really looking at like who I have above him, and do I see a path of or an argument that I feel comfortable putting him higher? And I think the situation in Green Bay to me with that wide receiver room, it's crowded. And what I noticed is there's not really that elite option in the passing game. he has a lot of good options, a lot of wide receiver three, four types. I love Jaden Reed. I think Dontavian Wicks is interesting. I think Christian Watson needs some hamstrings. So that situation to me doesn't seem as, I don't know, secure to me or as supportive in terms of like outlook. Jordan
Wasn't he good?
Love,
Wasn't he good last year though? Like with those same guys,
no,
and Watson didn't even play.
he
The
was good.
quarterback fuels all the those guys, don't you say? The quarterback fuels that, not the other way around.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he
Okay.
does feel so. So my thing with Jordan Love was coming into the season last season, right? Which he totally blew off all expectation. I had, you know, very low, little expectations of him because he had very low experience in the NFL and then even in college, right? So for me, having that uncertainty was somewhat concerning to me, right? So for me, looking at the rankings, top six, I feel like it's basically locked in from like Mahomes to Burrow, and Stroud is probably the only player there that I would agree doesn't have that proof of concept longer than Love does, right? They both had one really good season, right? Elite season. So I would agree there. What I would say about Stroud though is he has a different situation in terms of insulation and draft capital and the team that drafted him and how they've already started to build around him in different, I see it in a different way. So if, for me to compare Stroud to Love, I think Stroud is a better passer. I think Love has a better upside in terms of the rushing upside. I think Stroud is more insulated in terms of the situation and the draft capital and the way that they're adding around him, like immediately, right? They have a window for this player and they're adding really good pieces. Green Bay added Josh Jacobs, right? So I'm not going to say that they did not do anything as well, right? So I think in terms of me comparing Stroud to Love, that's kind of my analysis there. Then
Okay.
we look at, okay, no.
Well, I was gonna say the one I think that I would pull out if I was gonna do a 1-to-1, I would say Trevor Lawrence over Jordan Love. To me, that's a tough sell. Like, we haven't seen, everyone keeps saying Trevor Lawrence, like, he's really good. He's the golden boy. Look at it. I think a lot of these are priors from college. The fact that he was the easy 101, like projected as so for multiple years as a freshman, it was like, when can this guy get to the NFL? If you actually look at what he's done in the NFL, and especially fantasy wise, and he has had good weapons around him, there's not a lot of excuse. I just think we're going to get to the point that this is an extreme statement, but I wouldn't be surprised in 3 years if he hasn't shown a ceiling that he's viewed similarly or in the ilk of a Derek Carr of like, oh, this guy's a career QB2 type, good functional, NFL quarterback. Maybe you can win with him, but fantasy wise, we're going to be like TikTok. You haven't shown us the ceiling yet. And that's my fear with Lawrence. And I think we have seen a ceiling with Love. So those would be the two. I wouldn't pit him with Stroud per se, straight up, but I do think Trevor Lawrence would be the one that I would probably highlight in the head to head of, I don't
And
understand that one.
you make a really good point, actually, right? I mean, I think it is some of my priors, right, that I haven't really gotten off of Lawrence. Like I thought he was a great prospect. I think there was some excuse that I'm trying to build in terms of like, okay, well, he had Urban Meyer and he still brought his team to the playoffs, right? Like he still had a playoff team and he still had a really good season. So we saw the flash there, right? So it wasn't like he didn't show the type of ceiling that Love showed, right? Love showed it, I think, in a different way because I think he had more to prove because he didn't have, again, the pomp and circumstance and all the hoopla around him and all these like additional expectations. So I agree with you. You know, in transparency, I do have Herbert, Murray, Lawrence, Purdy, Dak, Love in a tier, right? It is hard for me to pry them apart and say, you know what, these guys are, you know, in a tier of in themselves or better than them. So it is difficult. I do appreciate you challenging me on this because going like we talked about in a vacuum, right? I'm putting these guys and I'm like, oh, I don't really like Love that much. And I'm figuring out all the different, I don't know, the bare points, right? All the outs on Love. And maybe I'm not doing the same process or I'm not having that the devil's advocate. But I think you make a good point about Love and Lawrence, you know, really kind of being a better comparable pair in that situation. And I think you make some really good points about it is going to be hard for me to stand on love over Lawrence, in Dynasty, especially if, we start next season in like the first, few games, and, we don't really see much from Lawrence, and, Love's still, doing his thing. So.
More of a rapid fire for the others. My running back that I picked out was Aaron Jones. I will precursor it with this because I understand he's old. I understand he's changing teams. I understand he's had durability issues. My one charge would be, you have a week one starting running back that has shown proof of concept. He's a good player and can be a running back one. You have him at running back 40. That is alarmingly low for a guy that, frankly, we're looking for one good year out of a lot of these running backs, and we'll take that from almost anywhere outside the top 5 to 10. Like, give us one good year.
Yeah,
Aaron
but I
Jones,
mean,
either you project him to not have one good year in him, or you really like a lot of those young guys that may never be starting running backs.
I actually like Ty Chandler to kind of form a committee in Minnesota,
Fair
right? So I
enough.
think Ty Chandler is an upgrade over AJ Dillon, right? So right, and even in Green Bay, which I don't know what they're doing by even playing Dillon as much as they did when Jones was healthy, that frustrated me like hell because I had Aaron Jones on a ton of teams and it was frustrating. And I love Aaron Jones. I mean, right, he's explosive, right? He's great in the passing game and he scores. He has a nose for the end zone. Yeah, and so for having him at wide running back 40, it's really a product of I'm just afraid that, he's in a committee with Ty Chandler. He's missed six games last year, right? He played 11 in 2023. He gets injured early on, and Ty Chandler, who the Vikings have seem to like, I mean, they obviously signed Jones, so maybe they don't like him as much as I think they do. But that's also, they have a rookie quarterback, so they're probably trying to build up that running game. Really, for me, it's the concern that, we're gonna have a committee and Ty Chandler is going to, carve out a decent sized role. I think that's really pushing him down in my rankings right now.
Yeah, I think that is apt though. If you're going to have Aaron Jones low, you do have Ty Chandler overtly high, I would say,
Yeah.
compared to the market, or if you will. So being on the other side of that depth chart and that backfield is important, if that is your take. All right, we talk about players. Earlier on the show, you were talking about impact players. You were talking about blending things. It's hard to not like the cheetah, Tyreek Hill. Cheetah gonna cheetah. I mean, he's one of the most outlier high-end efficiency players. Can just take your breath away with big games, big plays, and nothing's really changing in the Miami offense. I guess Tua missing games, which is a surprise he didn't last year, is maybe the biggest risk factor. You have him at wide receiver 12. I would imagine if you have a contending team, you probably would value him and vice grip him more than wide receiver 12 if he's on your team going into week one.
100%. So this is where rankings is hard because you're trying to put out rankings that are one in a vacuum, but then two almost like agnostic to like what your league is, your settings, your team
Anything else
build,
going
and
on, right?
everything else going on, right? So for me, looking at Dynasty, looking at what the market is, where everyone else is valuing these players, where I value this player in my process, I felt like wide receiver 12, it feels low. And like when I even say it feels low, if I'm in a contending team, he's easily a top five guy for me. Easily.
Well, here's a rhetorical question, because my argument is 95% of teams should be contending. Like, I almost felt like I have like neutral values, contending and rebuilding and all this stuff. But then I felt like I was misusing all these terms because I think too many people don't think they're contending. And so one thing that I'm trying to move away from, and just in terms of the terms that I use for people, is just like, contending is almost everybody. Because, like,
Yeah.
we talked about that, right? Like, some people are taking themselves out of the race before the race even starts. You don't even know. If you start out 2-0 and you're like, that's bad news. Like, you're winning. That's good. We're here. We're contending. Nice job.
Yeah.
So I just think like that applies to almost everybody with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. Okay, even if you're contending, right, in Dynasty, and we're looking at like just points in 2024, right? I'm not going to say these players are all going to score more than Tyreek Hill, but they're going to score in the same area code, most likely, right? Jefferson, Lamb, Chase, St. Brown, Puka, AJ Brown, right? So, I mean, that was what, five or six players, right? Right there, just off the top, right? So then you're going to bake in the Marvin Harrison Juniors, the Garrett Wilsons, right? Then it's like, okay, then Tyreek's probably in 10. I'm looking at my rankings. I probably should have him at wide receiver 9. Like, if I'm really going to be 100% honest after talking to you, I probably can't have him higher than 9, but I should have him higher than like a Waddle and Neighbors, right? Neighbors, it's hard for me, right? Because I just don't know. That's the mystery box, right? Is Neighbors going to be Tyreek? Like, I don't, and we get him for that long. And that's where I fall into that same trap of having a process and sometimes, straying from that process, right? It's sometimes it's the, I want the production, right? And it's, do I want to give up a matter of 1.2 points per week, like points per game, in exchange for a Puka Nacua or someone a little bit younger, right? And then that's where my calculus always comes down to when I'm doing dynasty ranking. So yeah, with Tyreek Hill, yeah, admittedly low, right? I don't think I could have him higher than 9 more realistically in dynasty. So if you're challenging me like to, kind of readjust or, reconsider my stance, I would agree with you there. But, to the counter to that is if I'm going to win now, I would still be happy taking my chances with a younger guy that would be putting me in that same area code of production. Hopefully I have some other pieces as well, right, to kind of put me over the top, right? Hopefully I'm not just relying on Tyreek Hill outproducing AJ Brown by, two heads.
Points. You gotta really the thing I would say, the what makes Dynasty fascinating, and we've seen this work out. I remember when someone would trade, you get the high-end wide receiver that get to 29 or 30 and you recycle that. And I remember they did it when like you could have flipped that to go to a rookie AJ Green or Julio Jones. Like I remember people doing that. And I can't remember what the wide receiver was that was the 29, 30-year-old stud at that point in time. But it makes me think of these comparisons right now of the bet of Tyreek Hill and what does he output in terms of wins over replacement and impact in a 1 to 2 or 3 year sample size. And then the bet on someone like Marvin Harrison Jr. or Garrett Wilson. Like those two, for example, relatively speaking, they've done nothing. So you're making the bet that they get really good fast because otherwise you're hemorrhaging Tyreek Hill probably over the next 2 seasons of he might outproduce them and you can't make that up like with okay play. Chris Olave, like we've seen really good play from him. It just hasn't come through fantasy production output, actual tangible points. So that's a trickier one because I think everyone acknowledges he's good. But fantasy wise, how good will he be? And then all the other guys, like you said, if you're getting younger and getting Puka, like he has a really good profile. Amon-Ra St. Brown, like I do agree with you. There's a ceiling of like you can't go higher because these other guys could match him or get close enough. But I do think the Marvin Harrison Jr. and Garrett Wilson are interesting. You could be on either side and be dead red right. And I think everybody says, well, you take the younger guy always type thing. When I don't think either one
You
has
make
really
really good points.
shown.
No, yeah, you make really good points, right? I mean, I think that's
It's
for
risky.
me
Either way,
really
it's risky.
enlightening, right? Yeah, because I'm huge on Garrett Wilson, right? Like, I've always been really big on him. And I think you make a great point. Like, he's had a lot of targets, right? And he's shown some stuff, right? Like, he's commanding the targets, he's commanding the ball. We've seen that. He's produced with, really bad quarterback play, but he hasn't done Tyreek Hill type of, or anywhere near that. He hasn't done Puka Nacua type production. Right. So I think you make some really good points in terms of you missing out on the value and the production at the same time.
One question I've never asked, because it seems like everybody's higher on Garrett Wilson than I am, because I'm going by it's been 2 years. And yes, you can make excuses for quarterback all you want. I get it. It's a legitimate excuse. I do believe he's a good wide receiver. Now, is he an elite one? That's my big question. And the assumption is if I told you right now Aaron Rodgers is going to miss 10 plus games this year, where would you have Garrett Wilson ranked? Would it be exactly where it is? Would you just keep doubling down and saying it's going to get better at some point?
No, I mean, I think at a certain point you're right. Like, it's, the floor's got to fall out, right? I mean, the thing that we're banking on as Garrett Wilson truthers or, supporters or fans is, I mean, he has a tremendous college production profile and he's a tremendous, I mean, we see all that, right? Whether it's the film or the number, like the metrics, all that, right? And then he comes in and he's seeing like 150 targets plus, right? The first 2 seasons, right? So we're seeing that, right? We're just hoping for like that CeeDee Lamb, that connection of we know who he is, he's commanding the targets, that we just got to see it click together, right? Like just that connection. I think that's what we're hoping on, right? If it doesn't come to fruition, or Aaron Rodgers, What if he doesn't even miss that many games and Garrett Wilson still finishes at like wide receiver 15 or something? That's not going to be good at all. That's
It's
absolutely no
crazy that you
excuse.
said wide receiver 15, and I think most people would view that as a disappointment, which I think is accurate.
No, yeah, I think so. I think
It's a
if he
high
finished,
bar.
that is a high bar because he finished his best finish was 21, right? That was rookie year and
And to
then
reiterate, we're
26.
all banking on a 40-year-old quarterback that used to be mobile, worried he's not mobile, and he's coming off an Achilles. And his calf, for his NFL career, his calf will never be the same. So how does that play? And a guy that, frankly, I mean, when's he going to just say, "Eh, enough with this"? You know, he hasn't even really played for the Jets. Anyway, I just find it fascinating. And we know quarterback's tough to fix. So if they go out into the wilderness of quarterbacks next offseason, who's to say they fix it? So it's going to be fascinating. Maybe he is the new AJ Brown. He's just great. The situation will clear up. He'll be great at some point. Just maybe not now. Who knows? All right, last one here. Another one, a deal with the devil, a Tyreek Hill style. Travis Kelce. Tight end 8. I get it. Tight end is highly competitive. I would say the top 5 to 10 is more competitive, more outs of guys that can finish in the top 3 than we've seen in years. But I'll just say this. You're tempting it by betting against one of the goats, right? I mean,
Yeah, he's one of the goats, right?
so if he is Travis Kelce from the playoffs or the typical Travis Kelce for even 1 year, this ranking is too low, right?
Yeah, of course. Of
Okay.
course. But yeah, but I'm really banking on, Andy Reid, and the Chiefs getting smart and saying,
Slow
okay, well,
playing him.
Kelce wants to play, and just, start to slow play him a little bit, right? You got
Playoff
guys,
Kelsey. Okay.
playoff Kelce. I mean, that's, and you like you have some really young studs right now at the position, and you got like still got Mark Andrews, Evan Engram, like who actually have lower than Kelce right now. I feel like there's a good argument that Evan Engram should be higher, because he's had a renaissance himself in terms of kind of, career resurrection and, how much, he's, producing out in Jacksonville. So, I think 8 is probably fair in dynasty for Kelce, given that we just don't know where it can go from here. Obviously, we know the proof of concept of the ceiling and, he's been a, really healthy and stayed, he's been on the field. But all goats, right? They all have their day, right? So, I'm gonna hedge a little bit, and I think, really a product of my rankings, for the most part, is if I start feeling some risk with the player, whether it's warranted or not, or something that's subjectively in my head, even with Tyreek Hill, like the character stuff, right? Maybe something comes up, or Kelce, maybe they're gonna start to slow play him a bit, and he's kind of focusing more on winning more titles and those deep playoff runs. No, that's kind of why I'm pushing him down that low.
I guess
And he's 34, turning 35 in October. So yeah, that's, the advanced age as well.
the last question I would ask, because I find this fascinating. So the tight ends, if you had to draw on your rankings a one tier line or two tier lines in the notable guys, like whether that's, let's stop the discussion at Kelce at 8 or Ingram at 9 or Kittle at 10 or whatever, like even if it's the top 5 guys, whatever you want to do, but where would you put a tier line or two to show a bigger drop off than just the straight ranking numbers?
Yeah, so I mean, I probably chunk it like 1 through 5, Laporta, McBride, Kincaid, Bowers, Andrews, kind of in a tier. And then that second tier, I feel like it's really like, Pitts, Hawkinson, Kelce, Engram, Kittle. I mean, I think it kind of ends there, but you can make a case that there's like a small half step to like Njoku, because like
Okay.
Njoku is kind of interesting, right? So, and then from there, it's probably another half step to Ferguson, or maybe a full step down to Ferguson. And then I think there's another line there, right?
Okay.
So I think there's, yeah. So I think there's a pretty big second tier where, like Pitts, I have him kind of high because I'm like, oh, I see some of the upside there. But if things don't come together and I can see that really not happening, I mean, he could be tumbling right down, after, Njoku, after even, something like that, because it's like we had one good year and like, you're running out of excuses at this time, at this point.
Talk, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your time and talents. Let me scrub through some of the interesting points and talking strategy with dynasty rankings in general. It's a very transparent thing to put those out there. Obviously, we talked about team synergy, balance, also some of the key points of your strategy in terms of team building and dynasty management. Where can folks find you, and what are some things that you would highlight in terms of your content so that they can look at what you've done this offseason and what they can expect going ahead?
Yeah, so you can find me at theunstoppables.com and then on X at 101 Chalk. Most of my content is dynasty kind of focused, dynasty strategy. I have a Art of Dynasty series that we kind of touched on, throughout today's show. You can find that at the Unstoppables website. And that's really where my content is focused. I do put out rankings as well that you can poke me on on social media. Chad, thanks for having me on. Honestly, like it's been a pleasure really getting to know you, kind of face to face and, kind of talking through some of the process and having you, test my mettle a bit on these rankings and, iron sharpens iron, like I always say. And, it was a good time.
Excellent stuff. Thanks so much for coming on once again, sharing your time and talents. I am Chad Parsons. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.